If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
What's good, internet? Welcome and thank you for tuning in to the Syrupcast. The Syrupcast, in case this is your first time, is a podcast by Mobile Syrup in which we look back at the week that was in Canadian telecom and tech news. I'm your host, Igor Bonifacic. This is episode 193. We're recording it on Thursday, March 28th. This week, I'm joined by Mobile Syrup Managing Editor, Patrick O'Rourke. Pat, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm good. Good to have you back.
I'm back and alive, back from California and New York. And yeah, no, that was it. That was it. That's the only places I've been.
It's quite a few in just 2 weeks. Joining us as well is Mobile Syrup staff reporter, Brad the Elder, otherwise known as Brad Shankar. How are you, Brad?
I'm great. Thank you for having me back.
It's great to have you back. On the ones and twos, we have the younger Brad, whose birthday it is today. Happy birthday. It's on Sunday, apparently. This is what makes the Syrupcast such great radio.
Goes up on Friday, so someone could be technically listening to it on your birthday. It's possible.
The plan all along.
Anyway, it was quite a busy week last week and this week, and much of the Mobile Syrup staff was out of the office, but now we're back. We covered all the events for the time being. There's more to come because that's just tech in general. And we brought on Brad and Pat because they were at two of the events that we're going to talk about. So I thought first we would talk about Stadia because that's the...
That makes sense.
Because the other one we're going to talk about, Apple's event, is the more recent. Brad, you were at GDC, which is, for those who don't know, the Game Developer Conference. It's held annually in San Francisco. And you were there for the keynote. Do you want to just give us a bit of kind of flavor of what that event was like and what you saw?
For sure. So Google had a keynote about Google Stadia. It's their game streaming service that they've been teasing for a while now. They did a public test for it last year in the US with Assassin's Creed Odyssey made by Ubisoft Quebec. And then this is when they unveiling like the full service. So during their keynote, they revealed that only a few games so far they've talked about: Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Doom Eternal, the upcoming first-person shooter. And then there were a few indie games as well. And basically, the idea is to let you stream high-quality games on virtually any device. Like the original test that they ran with Assassin's Creed Odyssey, you could play that on like a low-level Chromebook in a Chrome browser, for example. So it's streaming entirely to your device, so you could play it on low-level tablets, laptops, even mobile devices, and they created a controller for it as well, which incidentally is actually has a big Canadian connection because a team in Waterloo made most of the software and like all the back-end stuff for the developers was handled by that team. So really cool Canadian connection there.
So I think there are a couple really cool features with Stadia, at least, you know, features that they teased. Who knows how they'll come to fruition.
Vaporware,
yes. Do you want to just go like high level over those?
Sure. So in addition to like obviously the game streaming itself, there's kind of like three pillars to Stadia. They talked about like the game streaming, YouTube integration, and then like developer tools. So like with the YouTube integration, the idea is that because obviously YouTube's such a big platform for Google, and they say that 50 plus billion hours of gaming content were watched in 2018 alone. So it's obviously a huge part of YouTube gaming. So the idea is that there's a bunch of features that integrate YouTube into Stadia. So for example, if you're playing like Assassin's Creed Odyssey and you're stuck on a boss or a puzzle or whatever the case may be, you could go onto YouTube and you could watch like a streamer doing that, playing that part, and then you can jump in where they're playing. Or if you need help, just help in general, you can just search for assistance with that particular part through YouTube, all from within the game. And then there's features that like the content creator can implement to allow people to jump into their game at various spots. So it's all kind of about fostering that community.
I just love the idea of this, you know, like jump in at any point. I can imagine like, oh, let's watch, you know, Sekiro just came out. Let's watch this YouTuber take on this boss. Oh, I want to jump in at this boss. This boss absolutely wrecks me and I never want to play this game again.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like the worst form of advertising in a way.
Yeah. Anyway, more generally, what are our thoughts on Stadia, starting with you, Pat, and then...
I mean, I think it's cool. What I found really interesting about the platform is just the different ways various outlets were covering it. Like, I think if you look at the tech press, like sites like Mobile Syrup or The Verge or Engadget.
Never heard of these sites.
I don't know what they are. They were covering it in a very different way, sort of like, this is cool. This sounds really neat, but Google kills projects all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Google does things. They get right behind them and then they kill them a year later because they didn't pan out to exactly what they wanted it to be.
Mm-hmm.
And then the gaming press was kind of covering it in this way where like, we've seen this before, other companies couldn't do it, but if anyone can do it, it's Google.
Yeah. So to preface thing. That, yeah, obviously the big touch point is OnLive.
Yeah. So there's OnLive, which didn't pan out. There's PlayStation Now, which is still a thing that exists that might have a greater emphasis in the next generation of consoles with the PS5. I think that's the rumors that we're hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And to my understanding, like it works. It doesn't work incredibly well, but it works.
Mm-hmm.
And Microsoft's also doing something as well. What's that?
xCloud,
where you're able to play Xbox games on any platform. So, I mean, it's not just Google doing this. I think it's really cool. I think some of the social features are very forward-thinking. They're not things that I would personally want to use. Like, I don't want to jump into exactly where a streamer is playing a game. I also don't want to, like, jump into Fortnite and play in the game with Ninja or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, that's not something I'm interested in doing. But that's not to say other people aren't.
Mm-hmm.
I think the big thing for me is just don't believe that this is going to work just because it's Google. Google makes mistakes. They're not a super human company. Like, it's just a regular company. Like, I know they own and run, fortunately and unfortunately, a great part of the world, mostly unfortunately. But don't just assume it's going to work because it's Google.
Right. Yeah. And I also think, you know, like, there are very huge technical burden hurdles that need to be surpassed to make this work. And I just don't know. And we'll talk about those more in just a moment. But
yeah, I just wanted to add one more thing. So the other thing, too, that I observed when the announcement happened is there's a lot of people that... So one of my big things was like, hey, this is sick, but it probably won't work for anyone that doesn't have a really good internet connection. And Brad can talk about this because he spoke to some executives involved in the project related to speeds. And the general sentiment was like, if you live in a rural area of the country, screw you. Like, that's what commenters were saying. Why does Google need to care about those people? It doesn't matter. And like, I kind of understand that approach because like, I guess you need to leave some people that don't have as advanced internet connections in the dust. But from a business perspective, that leaves like millions upon millions of people in North America, because I think that's the first launch region. Unable to use the service, right? So even from a business perspective, that limits Stadia's audience.
Mm-hmm. Brad?
I got to go hands-on with Stadia, and they were letting people play Assassin's Creed, obviously, and Doom. And from my experience, Odyssey ran very well. I only saw a little bit of a dip in resolution when it was buffering, like, the world map when I popped it up. Otherwise, like, pretty much everything else seemed to be smooth, but obviously that's like their marquee title, so that's the one that they were testing way back last year, so that one's obviously going to be the one that looks and runs the best so far as like their showcase. I just think there's a lot of questions that remain, not just from what Pat was mentioning about how people will be won't be serviced if they don't have enough internet or whatever, because the Google says they're targeting, they recommend at least 25 megabits per second for 1080p, 60 frames per second, and about 30 megabits per second if you want 4K.
What about 4K HDR?
I think that includes HDR.
Did that include HDR?
Okay. Either way, that's what they say. But again, that doesn't help people who are in rural areas or who have limited bandwidth data caps, et cetera. And also, just we don't know anything about pricing or the games library right now, which is a big thing, because you mentioned PlayStation Now. That had a bit of a stumble out of the gate because the pricing was quite high, and a lot of people are like, oh, I'm not going to pay however much money for this monthly subscription that doesn't even have that many games. And currently, Google's done a good job, I think, in showing that they are diving all into this, because of the amount of, like, they've hired a lot of big-name developers from the games industry, like Phil Harrison, who has 15 years of experience between Sony and Microsoft. Jade Raymond, who worked at Ubisoft. She actually founded the Ubisoft Toronto studio and the EA Motive studio in Montreal, so she has a big Canadian connection. And a few other marquee developers. And they founded their own studio, which Jade Raymond is going to oversee. So they clearly are investing into it, but... again, we don't know the games lineup. They say they're going to tell us more maybe at I.O. later this year, but we don't know pricing. We don't know the games lineup. So it's hard to say how it's going to be.
So on that note, Brad, based on everything you saw of Stadia, like, how likely do you think the company is to deliver on the pitch?
Again, yeah, it's just hard because I think what we've seen looks cool, but just long-term, how the market's going to react to it, either because they can't afford it or because it's too pricey, or they literally can't access it because of regional areas, those kinds of issues. And Google hasn't really done a great job yet in telling us how they're going to circumvent those issues. I also think, as Pat mentioned, there's a lot of companies getting into game streaming now, and we haven't even seen anything from Microsoft really about Project xCloud. Like, that's still very much... under wraps. Walmart is rumored to be doing their own game streaming service, Amazon. So, you know, we don't, even just looking at Google in a vacuum, we don't know a lot from them. But then when you consider the larger industry, there are a lot of questions that still remain.
What's your take on that?
I want to know how much it costs, right? Like, I think that's the key thing. PlayStation Now was too expensive, I think, for it to be viable for most people. Like, do you know what the pricing is for Now, Brad?
I think they've lowered the prices since and offered a few more flexible options. Yeah. But it still is limited in the amount of games that it has. Like, it doesn't have too many PS4 games. It's mostly just PS3 and...
Yeah. So I believe this is in the US, but PlayStation Now is $19.99 per month. And yes, this is US because it's Polygon, and there's a yearly subscription for $100.
So, yeah, I think that, like, the way that people consume media now, Google has to go with some sort of yearly subscription model. I think paying, like, piecemeal for each game isn't generally the way that people view subscription services, I guess. Charging, like, $20 per game, I don't think that's going to take off. And then, I mean, the same thing that Brad was saying, like, platforms live and die on their software when it comes to gaming, as far as I'm concerned. So it really depends on what games are going to be available through Stadia. Stadia? Is it Stadia or Stadia?
Stadia. Yeah,
Stadia?
Yeah.
I've been calling it like different things every time I say the
word. I wanted to call it Stevia a few times.
Stevia. It's a sugar replacement.
Yeah.
So I think that's a big part of it, is like, we need to know what games are coming to it. And of all the titles released or shown off so far, I've already played Odyssey. I don't want to play it in the cloud because I've already played it. And the other games just don't really interest me.
Yeah, we haven't really had confirmation that it's going to have new games when they come out, because obviously Odyssey's a year old at this point. We don't know, not a year old, but half a year. But the point is, we don't know if, like, is Stadia going to get new games day and date, or are they going to come to the platform later? They haven't really said.
You would assume there'll be original titles too, because they made that whole new studio.
But even then, on that note, like, comparing them to Microsoft, obviously we don't know much about xCloud, but Microsoft acquired like 6 or 7 studios last year and founded their own one. So it's like, even compared to Google created their own studio, which is cool. Like,
but it's
that's
just
good,
one studio.
But Microsoft Now has such a large lineup of games, which you'd assume are all working on titles for whatever the next Xbox is, and possibly xCloud stuff as well. So it's like, even when you compare it to them, even not knowing much at the stage, it's like already Microsoft seems to have an advantage.
Yeah, and I also question, like, whether Google is interested in sustaining the costs that are associated
with
game development,
what I think,
right?
Yeah.
Like, so the fact of the matter is, it's like, it's not really the hardware that sells these platforms, right? Like, you know, yes, at the launch of the PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, the PlayStation 4 was the technically superior platform, but that's changed now. You know, the Xbox One X is you know, as Google's own slide showed, the stronger of the two consoles. But really, like, what has sustained PlayStation through this entire past generation is just it has had, quite honestly, the better games, right? So, like, you think about the costs associated with making a game, the turnaround time, like, you're looking, what, at best, like, 2-3 years?
If that, maybe more in this next generation
for
of games,
one game,
right?
For one game, right? One game does not sell a platform, right? Like, yes, there are exceptions, you know, like Zelda sold the Switch, but then that led to like a deluge of other games. So I think what like Google is really quickly going to come up against is like they need to become a game publisher, and being a game publisher is a very risky proposition, right? Like, unless you're like Take-Two selling GTA every couple of years, there are like no guaranteed hits, right? It is, and by their very nature, they are very conservative companies, right? Game publishers. They just go for what works. And I don't think that can, like, when you're trying to sell on a completely new platform, I don't know if that works, right? Like, you have to go at it. Like, you can't go half measured at it. You have to go full in.
Yeah, right? I think it would be a very different story if they came out of the gate with like a lineup of, I don't know, something even somewhat conservative, like 20 games. Even if there are games that have just been released or will be released soon, and then we're like, and we have this one original title that our new studio is working on. Here's a trailer for it, and it's coming out in 8 months or something like that.
Right. But then I think the other problem you come up against is like, why, if there's only one title on the horizon, would you pay hypothetically speaking, let's say it is $20 Canadian a month, right? To play one title for like a week, right, let's say, when you could, and then you're like paying $20 the next month and not using the service, $20 the next month and not using the service.
Yep.
At that point, you could have just bought a game and
owned
it. And that's the biggest thing about Stadia that I find is like very interesting is you don't own the games, right?
Yep.
So the fascinating part of that is like, what happens when Google decides like, we don't want to devote the GPU cores to this game anymore, right? Like, it's gone. You can't play this game you loved.
You can make the same argument in some cases about like downloadable games too. Like, didn't the Wii store just go offline?
Perfect example, you know, PT considered like,
yeah, that's true.
You know, like
the demo.
You know, the demo, it's like a game by Hideo Kojima, one of the most prolific game makers. You can't download that anymore, right?
Yep.
Like, and it's like considered somewhat of a collector's item at this point, right?
You can find like PlayStation 4s with the game installed on it that haven't been connected to the internet in a year or whatever on Kijiji for like way more than they're worth.
Brad, I think, you know, Google was really quick to highlight all of the advantages Stadia presents over traditional console and PC gaming, but I think it's fair to say, like I've just pointed out, there are a lot of disadvantages. What other disadvantages do you see from your perspective as someone who, like, I think it's fair to say, like, really loves console gaming?
Yeah. Again, just all the limitations for the consumer that they'll face. Again, we were mentioning the software lineup. We don't know, like, Google made it very clear. They're trying to make it clear that, oh, we're very supportive for developers. We have all these tools to help them bring their games to Stadia. And when I attended some panels, the few developers that they have confirmed partnerships with were saying it was easy. But obviously, they're confirmed partners so far. They're not going to hold a panel and say it was hard to bring a game to Stadia. So like they have some tools like they showed off, which you can, which is called Style Transfer ML, like machine learning ML, which you can like overlay assets with based on like photos or images that you've taken from the real world. So they showed off like Pac-Man as an example.
That's cool.
Which is pretty cool. So like things like that are cool, but we don't know, other than the developers that they've said they've partnered with, we don't know if developers want to use these tools. We don't know if they are that easy to use. Just without hearing a lot from the development community.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's
hard to say like how many people want to support this. Again, even going back to Microsoft or Sony, even if hypothetically Microsoft couldn't get any third-party support for xCloud, they have now like 12, 13 plus first-party studios that can just pump out content for them. Google has one.
Yeah, I really think, like, as far as I'm concerned, xCloud is the one that's more exciting for me because I know that there's going to be games there that I want to play, right?
Yeah, and the other thing I think you should mention is, like, Microsoft just has as good of a pedigree in cloud.
Azure.
Like Google does.
Yeah.
Right.
And I think, there's rumors that Microsoft is working on like a diskless Xbox One S, as well as like an enhanced Xbox One
X. Supposed to be revealed like next month too, right?
Something like that. I think that's smart because at least xCloud is for the people with strong internet or whatever, but then they're also still supporting cheaper, more affordable consoles, you know, people who aren't necessarily well off to do the kind of internet-based stuff can still get involved in gaming because that's very much Microsoft's vision, which they've been very clear about, is gaming for everyone, regardless of whether it's console or tablet or whatever.
Which is smart even from like a business perspective, right? Because they're trying to hit every angle.
Yeah, whereas Google is kind of saying the same thing, but they're only focusing on the streaming aspect of it, which they're, by definition means it's not for everyone.
Gaming for everyone with a good internet connection.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, what do you think the business model is going to be with this platform? Like, especially, not only from the consumer side, but from the developer side too. Because when you think about it, like, games, yes, they are expensive. You know, you're paying like $70 Canadian, $80 Canadian for a new game, but that money goes directly to the publisher and the developer. Now you have this model in which it's like $20 a month, right? Like, how, as let's say an indie developer, do you make money on Stadia, right? Because it's, I imagine it's a lot like Spotify, right? Where it's like, if you're a small, like, you're not making money on this.
Yeah, that was one of my questions about it too. And I mean, like, we don't really know much about how developers are paid for PlayStation Plus or Xbox, not Game Pass. What's Xbox?
Games with Gold.
Or like, we'll talk about it later, but even Apple Arcade, right? Like, all this is notoriously like kind of kept under wraps in terms of what the revenue split is. I would expect it's like, here's a ton of money for you to release your game on our platform, but then also here is like how much you will make based on engagement. Because I think that's how it ends up working on those other competing sort of game subscription platforms. But I don't know. That's the big thing. Like I've heard rumors that like developers will release something on Games with Gold. They'll get an outright lump sum of money that seems really good, but then the game will become very popular. And then like you sometimes hear complaints that like they're not getting what they feel they deserved after that big lump sum of money.
Rocket League launched in popularity because it was a PS Plus game.
Yeah.
And same with Towerfall, that was a PlayStation Plus game as well, Canadian made.
And then I always wonder, like, if I was an indie game developer, I would be like, oh man, should I really have put my thing on this platform to get that prominent placement? Could I have just released this as a regular game on PlayStation Plus or whatever? Would I have made more money? Like, I don't know how they're going to approach it, but I'm assuming it's going to be with Stadia a very similar model.
I also never, I didn't mention it earlier, but you have to consider kind of like the types of games. Like Assassin's Creed Odyssey, I didn't really experience any issues with it. But even if I did, that's not so much of a game that gets hurt by that. But like, you're not going to want to stream like a battle royale game, like an intense battle royale game that
with 1,000 players.
Yeah, especially where, it dips for a sec and then you die and then you're out for the whole match. Or even like single player games. You mentioned Sekiro, like that's like the Dark Souls, the From Software games are very much you need that like solid frame rate. It's a life or death situation if it dips for a second or two even. So
yeah, anything that's like reflex based, like a first person shooter, like I'm trying to imagine playing Apex and then having the frame rate dip, which happens now since the latest update as a side note. How that would affect the experience, right? Like you're in an intense firefight, every little move, every second, millisecond counts in terms of your decision making, and you lose that little segment of time, you come back and you're dead, right?
And fighting games as well. So
It just occurred to me, like, one of the interesting things is, you know, they showed this on running on a smartphone, and I'm thinking, like, that is something like there's the 5G connection of it, which is, you know, like with current 4G LTE, there's not the latency to like really enable this where it's super smooth, and 5G will enable that. But more interestingly, it's like, at best, most Canadians, if they're lucky, have the $65 10 gigabyte plan, right? Yep. So you imagine what it would look like. They will burn through their data cap in, if you're streaming, let's say, like 1080p gameplay, right?
I mean, the thing that I imagined in terms of that, like, mobile on the go, being able to play it, was something like I was sitting in a hotel room bored after the Apple event, and I was like, I wish I could play Apex right now. I have this iPad mini here. What if I could connect my Stadia controller to the iPad mini and then be able to play over this absolutely horrible hotel Wi-Fi? I wouldn't be able to, right?
Because it's like 5 megabits at best.
But in this perfect world where, like, I paid the extra fee for the better hotel Wi-Fi, like, I could actually play this game on the go. That's kind of what I envisioned, rather than, like, being on the streetcar playing it. But I don't think that's what Google wants. I think they have this, like, not realistic idea that people will be able to take a game anywhere and play it, even when they're on mobile data. And I don't think that's realistic.
All right. So we should shift gears just because we're running low on time, and talk to another company that, another company that announced a bunch of services. In this case, obviously, that's Apple. It was one service after another. Pat, you were there at the event. If you had to pick one announcement from Apple Showtime keynote, which do you think was the most significant?
I found I think that obviously the Apple TV Plus was a big deal, but we don't know much about it. There's
shocking,
which was pretty disappointing, given the rumors. Brad writes a lot of that stuff for us, so I'm sure he was like, "What the hell? Why are they not showing us trailers?" They showed a sizzle reel at the end, but it still didn't give us really an idea of what any of these shows are. I think that was the big thing for me, like, you're putting your best foot forward here, but you should be showing what these shows actually are to get people excited about them. I didn't expect them to, like, go through a trailer for each one, but, like, maybe some of the more notable ones, like C, seem pretty cool, but I want to know what it is, right?
Filmed in Vancouver.
Yeah, and it's filmed in Vancouver. And there's a couple of other shows that, like, the morning show seemed, maybe it could be funny, but I want to see a trailer. I want to know more about it. These, like, little TED Talk things with trotting out different celebrities didn't really appeal to me. So I think it was kind of the situation where Apple just didn't know how to approach this event. They didn't know how to present this content because they've never done it before. So that was obviously, like, the biggest announcement was Apple TV Plus. And the one thing I want to note is that service will look very different in Canada. It's not going to be the same thing as it is in the US. We're not going to have Starz content. We're not going to have HBO. We're not going to have Showtime. That's all, for the most part, locked up by Bell and Crave. Crave will be available through the TV app, but you're not going to be able, at least as far as we know as it stands right now, you're not going to be able to subscribe to Crave through TV Plus. And that makes the service a little bit different here. In terms of, like, what I was most interested in, and I'm writing, like, a little editorial about it that might be live by the time you hear this podcast, was Apple Arcade. I think it's, to a certain extent, if it pans out to what Apple's saying they want it to be, it could be exactly what the mobile gaming industry needs. Because one of the problems with mobile gaming is the expectation that everything should be free. That's, like, what players are trained to believe, is that mobile games should be free. And if you charge for your game and you don't have a direct relationship with Apple, which is still required for Apple Arcade to kind of be a thing, odds are people aren't going to buy it. So, like, a developer like Snowman, with a studio with ties to Toronto and Canada, can release Alto's Odyssey and charge, I think they charge $5.99 or $4.99 or something, which is a fair amount of money, but they can do that because they have a relationship with Apple. They know they're going to get prominent placement in the App Store, so they know they're going to make sales. If you're, like, Joe Blow developer, odds are that might not happen, right? Because you just get buried in the store. You can, like, do as much marketing as you want, but it might not get that placement in the App Store, because what it comes down to is, like, the people that play mobile games, they're casual players. They go to the store, they see what's listed. Apple made an effort to kind of fix the App Store up with the editorial curation that they have now with iOS. I think that was iOS 12 that it was added in. But I think that Apple Arcade, the one-time subscription fee, the whatever that's going to be, we don't know what it is, is a way for developers that are part of that program, platform, whatever you want to call it, to earn money from their games without including in-app purchases. There's like still a number of barriers in place. Like, how do you get involved in that platform? How open is it going to be for developers? Like, can anyone join it if they have a really cool idea? Or is Apple only going to continue working with the big names that they already know, like Rack7 or Noodlecake? That's a big thing. But in general, that was the announcement that I was most excited about, because there's a lot of really good mobile games out there that don't get the attention they deserve because they just get buried.
Yeah, I don't know if there's like maybe you can talk to this, Brad. I don't know if there's a place for like a premium service like this when it comes to mobile games, right? Like, even if it's like quote unquote a premium experience, like usually I love my iPad, right? But it's not the place I go to play games, right? Like, and I think that's what it really comes down to, is that the people who are willing to pay for these experiences don't necessarily play these games.
I think that's fair.
You know, yeah. Like, and then, you know, there's all the other stuff that you come with it. It's like, how is this revenue sharing going to work?
That's the biggest question, right?
You know, yeah, if it's like 50% Apple, like it is with their new subscription service, like what's the point then?
Yeah.
Right? Like,
it also depends on how developers are going to be paid. Apple's pretty careful in the way they're answering questions about it right now. Like, do developers get an outright fee? And is that all they get, or is it based on engagement after the fact, sort of thing? I would expect that it's an outright fee and engagement, but who knows?
I would hope so. Yeah.
But who knows, right? Is it going to be like a 30% cut? Is it going to be a 50% cut? There's so many things that we don't even know. We don't even know how much it's going to cost, right? So I think the other thing that Apple is trying to do with this is maybe trying, and I don't know if it'll work, but an attempt to bring in people that maybe wouldn't have been interested in mobile games in the first place, because they have the creator of Final Fantasy.
Hironobu Sakaguchi.
He also made Lost Odyssey. We were talking about that earlier. Stuff like that, like a developer that normally wouldn't be working in the mobile space. And then Will Wright's going to be making a game for it of some sort. So I don't know how many people they'll convince that like mobile games are a thing that you might enjoy, but I get the impression that that's part of the goal of what Apple's trying to do with this. Whether or not it'll work, I don't know. To be honest, it probably won't, but it's nice to kind of see that happening.
Anything to add, Brad?
In terms of Apple Arcade or
whether it's Apple Arcade or Apple TV Plus?
I don't have too much to say on Apple Arcade. I think Pat covered most of that. I think just with Apple TV Plus, like you said, we haven't really seen much of these shows. I mean, they just brought out big names to talk about stuff.
Which was cool, and like people were going crazy about it at the event, but like I actually want to see some substance after writing about these for so long. That was kind of where I was coming from.
Yeah, like as someone who's been writing about it a lot, I think they have something like 24 or 25 series in development at least. But even after covering a lot of this, I don't even know a lot about any of them still. And they can release all these big photos, like Tim Cook had a photo with like all the main stars behind him. Like they can release these photos, that's cool, but that doesn't mean anything if we don't know much about the content that they're actually in. Especially when... And then, like, knowing more about the behind-the-scenes stuff. Like, for example, Apple's had, like, a $1 billion war chest to fund this content. I'm sure it's probably gotten a bit more if they're creating more shows. But for comparison, like, Netflix spent, what, $8, $9 billion this year?
Yep.
So it's, like, even if you just look at from that perspective. And then Disney's not even in the race yet with Disney+. And Disney obviously can sell itself with Marvel, Star Wars, and its own Disney stuff. And we know they'll be putting a lot of money in. They've already said more about their original content, I think, in a way.
Probably, yeah.
Based on some of the shows.
We also don't know pricing, right? That's a big thing. Like, I do think that the service could be worth it. I don't think that it's too late for Apple to kind of join the streaming service fray. Like, I think there's still a bit of an arms race. Like, we're waiting for Disney. There's a bunch of services in the States that we won't get here that are still preparing to launch. So I think that arms race is still happening, and maybe they're a little late on the curve, but it's not too late. But it all depends on price, right? Like if you're going to expect people in Canada to drop like $20 a month on the service, that's not going to happen. If you price it something more reasonable, like even under Netflix, and there's like, I don't know, three or four shows on there that are decent, people might subscribe. Even then, it's a tough sell given the value that Netflix offers. I think we are going to see like some kind of ridiculous bundle, right? That includes iCloud, Apple Arcade, yeah. Apple TV Plus, and I don't know, any other subscription service that Apple comes up with. We're going to see something like that in the future for a price that's probably too much money. Like it'll be, I don't know, 30, 40 bucks, something like that, which most people, that's not an impulse purchase. That's like something you sit down and you're like, can I fit this in my monthly budget sort of thing? I think they might try that approach to an extent, kind of the Amazon, you get all this stuff and you get these free shows too.
Yeah, I haven't considered that Apple Prime.
Yeah, that Apple Prime approach to it, which I kind of get, but also Apple doesn't ship me products same day. Like, so it's a bit of a difficult sell, right?
On that note, any shout outs before we head out?
Yeah, I can do mine. I think Apple's presentation was mostly disappointing, but I was surprised by Apple Arcade, and I think it's pretty cool. I'm hoping that their promises regarding the platform pan out. So my shout out goes out to Apple for doing something cool for mobile games.
My shout out is to Cuphead coming to Switch. They made that announcement last week. Canadian studio, which is really great story. You know, they put all their mortgage, their homes, quit their jobs to go full in on this game, and it's been a massive success. It's already like the third highest game on the eShop, and it doesn't even come out for like 3 weeks.
Is that just people clicking on like the description?
And no, that's people pre-ordering. Actually pre-ordering it, which okay, is wow. nuts, which is great. Super happy for them. It's a wonderful game. And it's also interesting because Microsoft helped fund that game. So they've specifically working with Nintendo to bring it to Switch, which we've heard a lot of rumors about Nintendo being in bed with Microsoft, either to bring more services or other games. We might learn more at E3 since they're both at E3. So it's kind of a two-pronged thing that I'm excited for. Switch Cuphead for Switch in itself, but also the idea of more games for Microsoft on Switch.
I think we've seen them kind of do that before too, right? Like with Minecraft or even like their Microsoft Office suite. Like you can find that on anything now. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like we know we're losing the hardware battle, so here's our cool software. You can use it on whatever platform you want to use it on. But that's really cool to see.
Yeah.
Just to make it 3 for 3, I mentioned it earlier. Sekiro, I've been just really enjoying it. It's the new From Software game, famously creators of Dark Souls. If you're good. A masochist, there you go.
Get good the game.
Get good the game, yeah. In three parts. Pat, Brad, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Patrick_O'Rourke and as always on mobilesyrup.com.
You could also find me on mobilesyrup.com and on Twitter at Brad Shankar, BradShankar.
It's good that you spelled it out. I couldn't do that because my name's too long.
Wait until you try spelling my name.
I wouldn't even attempt it.
There you go.
Anytime I have to spell your name, I just cut and paste it from your byline. Just there you so go. I don't mess it up.
Don't mix him, Igor up with Ibor Bonachach.
Igor Bonachach, my favorite. You can find me at Igor Bonifacic at Twitter. That's BonifaCic. You can find Mobile Syrup at Mobile Syrup, whether that's Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next week, and we hope you have a great weekend. Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.